The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
Yes, welcome indeed. It is a Thursday, the 11th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024, 8 minutes after 9 o'clock, and we are underway here in Independence, Ohio. Thanks so much for joining us for Always Right Radio. Big show lined up for you this morning. We've got guests to beat the band, and they are good, and they are going to be educational and entertaining at the same time. Dr. Everett Piper cannot help but be those things. He's just that good at it. So Dr. Piper will join us at 10:10 as he does each and every Thursday as he leads us through the culture war issues of the day, of the week, of the month, of the year, of this era in our republic. 10:35, Congressman, Representative Thomas Massie from Kentucky will join us to talk about the controversial vote yesterday in the House to defeat the attempt to reauthorize the FISA bill, the FISA law. That is the controversial law, the controversial organization, essentially, that allows the federal government to spy on American citizens without warrants, to spy on pretty much anybody. It was looked like it was going to pass until President Trump intervened and tweeted, or rather truthed something out late yesterday. Actually, it was in the early morning hours. He likes to stay up late and tweet, now truth, and said, don't pass this thing. It's terrible. And enough of his Republican colleagues and allies took note and said, yep, we agree, and voted against it. Jim Jordan was going to vote against it from the start. Talked to him on Monday about that. But anyway, Thomas Massie is going to join us to talk about the dangers of big government and what it would look like if the FISA law, if you will, was extended, even if it was reauthorized, even if it had also been reformed, what that would mean to your privacy and to the surveillance state. So Thomas Massie at 10:35. And then at 11:10 today, John Stover is going to be with us in our studio. And I'm looking forward to that. John is the president of Ohio Value Voters. You probably know that already. And we're going to ask him a few questions about some of the things that are most important to the Ohio Value Voters organization, including abortion. President Trump continues to baffle people with his pro-life stance because he is, well, he's advocating for positions that are something a little bit less than pro-life these days. So we're going to talk to him about that. So before those interviews, between those interviews, and after those interviews, of course, we will interview you. 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. Either one of those numbers will be acceptable to get the job done. Just so you know, the first hour will be the easiest hour because we do not have anybody scheduled until Dr. Piper at 10:10. So keep that number handy. Put it on your speed dial. Get ready to be heard if that's what you would like to do between now and 10 o'clock. However, you won't be able to do a lot in this first half hour because we will be doing our top 9 at 9. And we'll do so right after we do our Pledge of Allegiance. So, Patriots, if you have a flag nearby, why don't you have a look at it? Stand up if you can, and put your hand on your heart and join us for this pledge. If you are a believer in Bidenomics, Biden border bloodbath, or anything else that is leading this country on the road to ruin, well, then don't fake your support for the country. Instead, acknowledge your disgust for it. Take a knee, like the other Marxists do. For the rest of us, however,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, it's 12 minutes after 9, but there's still a 9 in it, so that means...
It's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
All right, let's get right into it. We have a lot this morning.
Number 1.
There's a reason why the Biden regime no longer uses the word Bidenomics, because it's a completely unmitigated disaster. Inflation is still high, and it's rising yet again. Yesterday, the Consumer Price Index was announced. It rose 0.4% month over month and 3.5% annually in March, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That's up from 3.2% year-over-year growth in February and exceeding economists' expectations. Stripped of the more volatile food and energy prices, inflation rose 3.8% year-over-year. The hotter-than-anticipated data will likely keep the Fed from cutting rates when it meets at the end of the month and possibly longer. Biden is attempting to spin those numbers as a success, saying they're still down from the highs that they were just a couple of years ago, not mentioning that the highs were under his watch as well, as inflation went from 1.9% to over 9.5%. Biden's team put out, quote, "Today's report shows inflation has fallen more than 60% from its peak, but we have more to do to lower costs for hardworking families. Prices are still too high for housing and groceries, even as prices for key household items like milk and eggs are lower than a year ago." What an absolutely incompetent boob we have as a president of the United States. Here are a few specifics of the inflation numbers at the same point in their presidencies between Trump and Biden. Energy costs inflated 0.0% under Trump, 38.8% under Biden. Gasoline prices dropped 2% under Trump at this point of the presidency, 47.8% increase under Biden. Groceries, 3.3% under Trump, 21.1% under Biden. Transportation costs, 2.3% increase under Trump, 32.5% under Biden. Airfare was down minus 13% at the same point of the presidency under Trump, up 32% under Biden. Clothing, 0.6%, 0.6% under Trump, 13.5% under Biden. This is why they don't use the word Bidenomics anymore, because they have to acknowledge it is a disaster.
Number 2.
Speaking of Biden and Harris, how are they going to manage to win re-election with those horrible numbers? Well, apparently they're going to get the gays out for them. Wait, what? The Biden-Harris re-election campaign has announced a new push to win over a group of voters that it claims is a force to be reckoned with. Just 7 months ahead of the rematch with President Trump, they have historically low approval ratings, so they have launched the new term out for Biden-Harris. The campaign describes a program as a national effort to mobilize LGBTQ plus voters and community members across the country. In a statement, campaign manager said, "LGBT voters are a force to be reckoned with. They were critical to our victory in 2020. They will be critical to our winning again in November. That's why we're thrilled to launch Out for Biden." I'm waiting for straight guys to be wearing the Out for Biden Harris t-shirts at Biden events all over this country. That's going to go over really well. Which will harness the LGBTQ plus community's organizing prowess to re-elect Biden and Harris this November. I am so looking forward to the Out for Biden Harris rallies. That's astounding.
Number 3.
Former President Trump accused Biden of abandoning Israel yesterday, adding that any Jew who votes for Biden or any Democrat should have their head examined, and ticking off Democrats all over the country. Also ticking off a certain amount of Democrats supporting Jews. Trump said, quote, Biden has totally lost control of the Israel situation. He has abandoned Israel. He has totally abandoned Israel. And frankly, you know, he's a low IQ individual. He has no idea where he is and who he's supporting. He doesn't know if he's supporting the Palestinians, but he knows one thing. He is not supporting Israel. He has abandoned Israel, and any Jewish person that votes for a Democrat or votes for Biden should have their head examined. Jewish Democrats are really angry about that, calling President Trump, shockingly, the anti-Semite here. The guy that moved the American embassy into Jerusalem and recognized Jerusalem, not Tel Aviv, as the capital of Israel, fulfilling a promise presidents have been making for 20, 30 years. That's the guy that they're calling anti-Semitic. Okay. On the flip side,
number four,
President Trump continues to baffle pro-life groups with his bizarre and ever-changing stance on abortion. Speaking to reporters in Atlanta yesterday, Trump said he would not sign a national abortion ban if federal legislation passed Congress and reached his desk. I'm just going to let that sit for a second. He said he would veto or not sign a bill that Congress would pass that would ban abortion nationwide. Pro-life groups don't know what to make of this. He also said that the law that will soon go into effect in Arizona, which does ban all abortions in that state, with the exception of those necessary to save the life of the mother, went too far and will be, quote, straightened out. He then predicted that the six-week heartbeat ban that just was signed into law by Ron DeSantis in Florida, which is identical to what we have here, we still have here, but we don't know how it's going to play out in the courts with the abortion amendment that passed this past November. But he said that the six-week abortion ban in Florida would be rolled back by voters in November. Quote, Florida's probably going to change. Arizona's going to definitely change. Everybody wants that to happen, and you're getting the will of the people. I'm just going to continue to try to figure out our nominee when it comes to the pro-life issue. I don't know if anybody can. I, quite frankly, and I'm not certain that he can.
Number five.
How about this one? In a move that has sparked controversy and debate, Mattel, the maker of the iconic board game Scrabble, is set to release a new version of the game to appeal to the Gen Z demographic. This marks the first significant change to the game in its 75-year history, and it leaves many questioning the direction of both the game and the generation it seeks to engage. The updated version of Scrabble will feature two sides on the board, one with the traditional competitive gameplay that has made the game a household name for generations, and a second, quote, less competitive, end quote, side called Scrabble Together. The new mode is designed to be more accessible and inclusive, with helper cards, a simpler scoring system, and the ability to play in teams. According to the British Scrabble president, Giles Brandreth, Mattel's decision to create this new version was based on research that said younger Gen Z players, quote, don't like the competitive nature of Scrabble and instead prefer a game where they can, quote, simply enjoy language, words, being together, and having fun creating words. I thought the whole point of Scrabble was to only be able to use existing words. That's why you check the dictionary if you challenge someone. But in Gen Z land, they just want to make up their own. Kind of like they make up their own pronouns. In Gen Z land, everybody gets a trophy. Winning? Competitiveness? We don't want any of that crap. Every day I become more and more like the snooty waiter in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I weep for the future.
Number six.
The GOP House yesterday blocked the advancement of the bill that sought to reauthorize Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act for 5 years and implement reforms on the spy tool. The vote tanked a rule to bring the legislation up for consideration, creating a huge setback for House Speaker Mike Johnson, who is completely... you can't figure him out. He vouched for the bill after former President Trump urged lawmakers to reject the spy program to monitor non-U.S. citizens abroad. 19 Republicans voted against moving forward. The final tally was 193 to 228. What leadership does next is not clear, but it is possible they'll go for another extension with no reforms. They have until April 19th to reauthorize Section 702 before it sunsets. We're going to talk to Thomas Massie about that a little bit later on this morning.
Number seven.
Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas appeared before lawmakers on the Hill yesterday. Congress considering the 2025 budget request from the executive branch. Senator John Kennedy was ready to go when his time to ask the impeached Biden administration officials some questions. He said, quote, "It gives me no joy to say this, but most Republicans don't trust you. A vast majority of the American people don't trust you. That's why you've been impeached. The Census Bureau includes illegal immigrants in its count, and congressional seats are based on data from the census, according to the Bureau's website." Kennedy tweeted, "Senate Democrats may try to dismiss the impeachment charges against Mayorkas, but that they can't sweep the Biden border crisis under the rug. Not even a rug as big as the United States of America." In other words, Kennedy said,
"You just got to try harder not to suck."
Pretty much that. Let's see, where are we? We are on number eight.
Number eight.
Freshman Representative Jasmine Crockett from Texas, she's a Democrat, suggested that reparations should be paid to black Americans in the form of not making black people pay taxes. Crockett recently made headlines for perpetuating the debunked myth and narrative that U.S. Border Patrol officers whipped Haitian migrants. We all remember that story. She still apparently didn't get the news that it was completely made up and they were spinning the reins to keep people away from the horses so they didn't get trampled. But she was giving an interview on the Black Lawyers podcast. Didn't know that was a thing, but it's a thing. When she brought up the idea of black people not paying taxes, quote, "I don't remember which celebrity, but it was actually a celebrity that I heard it from. And I was like, I don't know if that's not necessarily a bad idea." End quote. One of the things that they've proposed is that black people not have to pay taxes for a certain amount of time. She went on to say that the proposal might be good because it puts money back in your pocket, but it might not work because, quote, "some people are already not paying taxes in the first place." She acknowledged that. Crockett promoted the overall belief that reparations should take form in some way because, quote, "so many black folks, not only do you owe them for the labor that was stolen and killed and all the other things, but the fact is, like, we end up being so far behind." End of quote. It just gets better, doesn't it?
Number nine.
Finally, an independent review of gender-related medical care for minors and young adults submitted Wednesday to the UK's National Health Service found that previous studies on the topic are of, quote, "poor quality," and there is, quote, "very limited evidence on the long-term outcomes," end quote, associated with medicalized transition. NHS England commissioned the independent review of gender identity services for children and young people in 2020. The report recommends children and young people referred to the NHS for gender services receive a holistic assessment that includes screening for neurodevelopmental conditions, including autism spectrum disorder and mental health assessment, end quote. In other words, the study that they commissioned nationally in 2020 said, don't do this to kids. They have mental health issues. And you better screen and study those and treat those before you go mutilating their bodies. But now they didn't like the results of the study, so they hired another crew to do another study saying, that one was totally, totally off base. It was really, really poor quality. Yes, they are committed in some places in Europe to do what we're doing here in the United States, continuing to castrate and mutilate children who are too young to know what in the living hell they are doing. In other words,
you bigoted, moronic, leftist, elite, lying sacks of crap.
Yeah, they exist in the UK as well. That's it.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, there you have your Top 9 at 9. If you've got thoughts, we will take those from you at 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. The next half hour is going to be open for your calls on any of those things that we just did. But I will tell you, I'm specifically motivated on the Biden out story, the Bidenomics inflation story, and President Trump's bizarre pro-life but kind of not really hardcore pro-life stance that he is announcing. He announced yesterday in Atlanta. I would very much like to get your thoughts on that. We're going to get the thoughts of Dr. Piper on that. We'll get the thoughts of John Stover on that a little bit later as well. But it's your turn. 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. Let's do this on Always Right Radio, AM 1420, The Answer.
Answer.
All right, 216-901-0945, the number to join us. You want to respond to any of the stories in the top nine at nine? Seth, when's the last time you picked up a Scrabble tile?
When I was probably 16.
Really? That long?
It's been a while.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I shouldn't say it like that, because I guess it's been a while for me, too. But since it was older than that. It was after college. Then again, I'm an English major. I like word games. I like words, period. I just, you know, I consider myself something of a linguist, so... But the younger generation, not only are they so non-competitive that they don't want to lose, they just want to have fun playing games, whatever the outcome is, the outcome is. They don't want to work really hard at it and think of real words. They want to be able to make up their own. And Scrabble said, done. We'll give you the Gen Z version of the game. For all of you dumbasses who can't spell words and don't know words and you make up your own words, here you go. I mean, you joke about this all the time. And you say, tell me again, the rapture isn't caught. I mean, honestly, yeah. We're not in end times, but this kind of stuff just makes me just weep for the future.
Did you see the commercial for it? They have like a kid sitting there playing with his phone, like looking stuff up on the phone.
No.
For Scrabble.
Are you kidding? That you're not. The whole point is you have to create words with the letters you have that exist, and you don't get to look them up.
I would beat my grandmother into the ground in Scrabble and laugh in her face after I was done because I.
Because like, she wouldn't know how to use a phone to look stuff up.
Even when I was 16, I did that because I was competitive, and that's what the game was about.
Yeah.
No. I use my phone. Well, Z-Zer is going to be worth 10,000 points. So it's all good.
Mattel's decision, let's see, is based on research that suggests younger Gen Z players don't quite like the competitive nature of Scrabble and instead prefer a game where they can enjoy language, words, being together, and having fun creating words. Well, what the hell? I mean, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. I'm just disgusted. I'm disgusted. You know, I'm so glad I have this story. Now, I'm going to interview the author of a new book about Gen Z, Isabel Brown, right?
Yes, on Monday.
From Turning Point?
Yep, Turning Point.
What's her book called? It's Gen Z Can Save the World or something like
something
that.
Like
or,
that.
Yeah, yeah. She's a Gen Zer, and she wrote an entire book that, by the way, is very popular. And she's been on a lot of popular programs. I'm going to be interviewing her for Strictly Speaking next week. And she defends, you know where I first heard her? I heard her on Prager. I heard a dentist was interviewing her about, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, a month ago, something like that. And she's defending Gen Z about all of the wonderful qualities and attributes that Gen Z has and how they're going to be the ones who actually save the world. And I see stories like this and I'm like, you're looking at a different generation than I'm looking at. I mean, the Zers in your orbit are very different than the ones that I'm seeing.
Anybody wants to look it up, it's the end of the alphabet, how Gen Z can save America.
Yeah, how can save America. There you go. I'm definitely saving the Scrabble story for that conversation. Yeah. All right, 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. BJ is in North Olmsted. BJ, welcome back. You're on the air. Go ahead, good sir.
Thank you. I'd like to bring some points up that you may not be aware of.
Okay.
American males before the end of World War II were not being circumcised. After World War II, they
You sure I need to know this?
It was called for.
I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead. Continue, BJ.
Circumcisions began because the way they identified the Jews in Germany was by circumcision, because it's part of the Jewish history to circumcise their boys.
Yeah.
And therefore, circumcision was introduced into America. My sons were not circumcised because I told the doctors when they delivered my sons, no, I want them to have their foreskin.
Okay, BJ, you're getting way too. We don't need this. Okay, we're getting way too graphic on this. Let's make a point.
I know, but I want to bring something else up too, if I may.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't remember discussing circumcision in the top 9 and 9 at all. I mean, did you?
Well, I'm just trying to make a point that a lot of things that were done were not done with the consent of the American public. And if we don't wake up to the fact that things are forced on the American public because that's political or protective for other groups, we're going to be in big trouble in this country. The acceptance of our borders being open is not because Americans don't care. It's because the government doesn't want the United States to exist as it is. They want the one world government. And if we don't pay attention to what's behind that and why it's behind it, then your children are not going to see the America or your grandchildren that we know. So we have to pay attention to some of these absurdities. Another absurdity would be, what would it be like if somebody came out and said, you know, are the people of color that were brought here from Africa, are they happy they're here? Maybe we should have Slave Master Appreciation Month for bringing them over. These are the kind of absurdities that I'm trying to point out. We are getting to be an absurd acceptance of a nation of all these absurdities. And if they keep perpetrating this, look at the laws that they're perpetrating on the public. Look how they're interfering with abortion, sex change. These absurdities have to be brought to the attention of each other and saying, stop it. Whoever the hell you are with these ideas, stop it. I just wanted to share that from my 93 years of what I've observed. And I only call your program because I want to help wake up the young American public. If you don't pay attention to what government is doing, not the one that's in office, but the one that's behind the scenes, we're in trouble. We're going to lose this country.
Well, you're right about that. Thank you, BJ. You got it. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. That started out in some strange places and got back to some other places. Look, you're right about the absurdities, and you're right about the goal. The goal is to force the people to accept absurdities as normal. It's called normalizing. We talk about it a lot. They want to normalize things like trans people. They want to normalize, you know, boys being converted to girls and girls to boys, even though those things cannot happen. They want to normalize the changes in the language. They want to normalize, so many different things that run counter to what Western civilization has adopted and evolved into over the course of, you know, the centuries. The Western civilization that we have right now is the most complete and freedom inducing, if I can phrase it that way, because it brings about freedom more so than any other civilization in history, and particularly here in the United States, but Western civilization. And it is a threat to those who want full-on control. And the globalists that do indeed want to bring the United States and Western civilization down and under, you know, more of a totalitarian type of control, they have to break apart what makes us us. And that includes normalizing the abnormal, normalizing the parts of our lifestyle and our culture that are the most dangerous, quite frankly. Let's normalize those things. Let's tear down the traditional norms and mores of what this Western civilization has been built upon. Then it will be easy to take down. It will crumble on its own, quite frankly. That's the old adage, obviously. If the United States is ever to fall, it will not fall from without. It will fall from within. And this is what they're trying to do. And a lot of the absurdities you just mentioned now are indeed what they're trying to make, acceptable. Thank you, BJ. Let's go to Valerie in Cleveland. Valerie, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks. You really hit a nerve on that Scrabble story.
Yeah.
You know, I play with my brother all the time, Scrabble. And it's fun. We really play cutthroat. And not too long ago, I wanted to use the word squaw. And I don't know. I looked it up just for the heck of it in the dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
I have an official Scrabble dictionary, and do you know what's not in there? The word squaw.
Squaw, as in young female Native American?
That's right. In the official Scrabble dictionary, and I even have an older one from 95, it's not in there. So I looked. I have an old dictionary of my mother's from like the 40s, right? It's in there, and it's not a proper name. It's not like I'm trying to use Jesus, which you wouldn't be able to use because right. you have to capitalize the J. Squaw's in there, lowercase S Q U A W. It's in the old dictionary of my mom's.
Well, I'm looking up one.
Not in the Scrabble.
I'm looking it up in one right now, Valerie. Just online, it's the American Heritage Dictionary, and there it is. Definition one, a Native American woman, especially a wife. Number two, a woman or wife. Number three, a female, a woman, especially a married woman or wife. I got it wrong. I said a young, but it didn't have to be young. In the language of Indian tribes of the Algonquin family, correlative of Sanup. So no problem at all. There is the definition. However, you know what the Wikipedia definition says? Because it's the second result in my DuckDuckGo search. The English word squaw is an ethnic and sexual slur. Historically used for indigenous North American women. Did you ever hear of it being a slur before, Mallory? Because that blows my mind.
Well, it blew my mind, and I was so upset for so long with that, and you really struck a chord, and now I'm quite upset. They've been woke for a while. If the word squaw is not allowed, it does not appear in the Scrabble dictionary, the official Scrabble dictionary. They've been woke for a while.
Yeah, I didn't know that. So Mattel is the maker. So now I'm going to put Seth on a little task here and look up Mattel's history and find out if they've got any other instances of their wokeness being...
Real quick, though. There is an explanation. Squaw is not a valid Scrabble word from the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. Squaw is a valid Scrabble word in the International Collins Dictionary.
I don't know what the International Collins Dictionary is, but the bottom line is the Scrabble Dictionary is what Valerie is saying. I didn't know, by the way, Valerie. We always just used whatever dictionary we had, whether it's Merriam-Webster or American or what have you. You're saying there is a Scrabble Dictionary, and so it's clearly not allowed either.
Right, I have it right here in my hand. I have the third edition, and that was printed in 95. So it's that one's even older. That's what I'm saying. They've been woke for a while.
Yeah, that's crazy. I did not know. I never knew it was considered a slur or a derogatory term. But then here's NPR, another result on my search. And Valerie, thank you for bringing it up. I appreciate the call, and I appreciate you sharing this with us. Seth, it's NPR, and we just did the NPR story yesterday. They are just in. By the way, did you see their stock? NPR is plummeting right now. But anyway, I don't even know they were traded, but I'm trying to remember. I just saw a tweet yesterday showing a chart showed NPR just being decreasing in value because of this scandal. But anyway, NPR result here says Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland formally declared the word squaw to be a derogatory term Friday and ordered a task force to find replacement names. Holy cow. This really reached the level of government? And I'm going to open the story here. Secretary of Interior Deb Haaland formally declared squaw to be a derogatory term and ordered a task force to find replacement names for valleys, lakes, creeks, and other sites on federal lands that use the word. The order, which takes effect immediately, stands to affect more than 650 place names that use the term, according to figures from the U.S. Board on Geographic Names. Racist terms have no place in our vernacular or on our federal lands. Our nation's lands and waters should be places to celebrate the outdoors and our shared cultural heritage, not to perpetuate the legacies of oppression. Holy criminy, are you kidding me? Squaw means female Native American.
Not according to a lot of articles out there. There's a lot of articles that say squaw is derogatory, and there's a lot of articles about squaw in Scrabble. So,
well, these articles then are all written by left-wing freaking woke organizations then. Because, I mean, think about it. Since when? I mean, have you ever heard anybody, Seth, you ever hear anybody call a female the B word?
Yes.
You pretty much know what that is, don't you?
Yep.
You ever hear them call the much more profane and graphic and universally despised C word?
Yes.
Yeah, horrible, horrible term. You ever hear anybody say, you freaking squaw?
Never.
Not
I have.
Once. No. Never. And yet somebody decided because, and this is the real... This is the real blank of it all. They want us to recognize everybody individually by their, you know, diversity. In other words, we're not allowed to be colorblind. We have to recognize black people as black and white people as white devils and Hispanic. You know, they want everybody to be identifiable rather than being colorblind, as Martin Luther King said, judge not by our color, but by our content and so forth. They want that. And so here is uniquely identifying a Native American woman as a squaw. And it's, you can't say that. That's a slur. Wait, what? What do I have to call her then? Just a woman? That makes her a woman like everybody else. So do you want individual diversity or do you not? Make up your minds. This is incredible.
Well, here from the Word Finder.
Yeah.
It gives you like places where it's actually accepted. But they have the definition of squaw as derogatory term for American Indian woman. Words yeah. with friends, you cannot use it.
Try to find me a place, an example of anybody who has ever used it in a derogatory way. Like I said, I've never heard of a woman being criticized or insulted or in intent to offend by calling them a squaw.
They have it changed. It's available in Scrabble now, yes.
The term has historically been used as an offensive ethnic, racial, and sexist slur, particularly for indigenous women, the Interior Department says. Find me one historical example of anybody using it as a slur, racial or ethnic or sexist. Find me an example. And if you do, I'll say okay. But anyway, to the point of the phone call, that's insane. They are woke. And now you can look up Mattel. Tell me what you find out about the Mattel company. All right, where are we going next? We're going to John in Chardon. That's where we're going. John, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Bob, whether you're for or against abortion, there is an answer that gets everybody off the hook. And over all these many years, I've never heard the media or anyone else bring it to light.
What's that?
Even the unborn baby... who would otherwise pay the ultimate price gets a shot at life. It's called adoption. I was born in the middle of the Great Depression when life was really tough. My parents considered aborting me, but they knew they made the right decision after I was born.
Well, is that the end of the story, John?
Yep.
Okay. I appreciate the call then. Thanks very much. You are, of course, right. It's the dirty word that nobody in the pro-choice side of the world is allowed to use. Nobody is allowed to push and promote and recommend adoption. Any woman who wanders aimlessly into a Planned Parenthood clinic, freaked out because of an unplanned pregnancy, asking for guidance, is never, ever going to hear the word adoption. You can have your baby and put your baby up for adoption so that a family that cannot conceive for one reason or another may take your baby in and raise them happy and healthy. Because guess what? Planned Parenthood, the Butcherhood clinics, they don't make a nickel out of a woman having her baby and then putting it up for adoption. Planned Parenthood makes plenty of nickels by saying, get in there, put your feet in the stirrups, and let's go. That's what Planned Parenthood does. And by the way, John, you're speaking to a fellow adopted person, so I know exactly what you mean. I was born, let me rephrase, my birth mother found herself in an unpleasant situation due to circumstances that I won't really get into because it's not important. But yes, she was given the option of having an abortion. This was in the 1960s. So it was before Roe versus Wade. There had to be a medical reason for it identified. And the doctor said, yes, you can. And she changed her mind and said, no, I don't want to do this. She had me. She put me up for adoption. And at 6 months of age, I was adopted by my parents, as I know my parents. And, if she had not made that decision, you would not be listening to this radio program right now. I don't want to dwell too much, like I said. But the bottom line is whatever it is that we all bring to the world, whatever skills and talents and abilities to affect other people that we have, many of us would not be able to do that had our mothers, our birth mothers, made a different choice. So thank you. For that message, John. Let's go to Ron, who's calling us from Strongsville, getting back onto the censored words. Hey, Ron, go ahead.
Good morning, Bob.
Good morning.
We're talking about words being omitted. I've been trying to, I wish God bless when I said happy birthday on my phone. No matter who I'm texting or what I'm trying to look up, God, the word God with a capital G, will not come up on your phone. Your phone will usually pop up all these other words, but the word God does not come up on your phone.
In a text message? You're saying in a text message, I can't text the word God with a capital G and it won't come up?
Well, no, if you put the whole word in, you know, if you type all three letters, but usually when you start typing.
You mean, as an autocomplete.
Yes, you'll get an option of other words, and that will not, and has never, and it has a hard time coming up with all three letters.
Yeah, well, I just did it. I just since you said it, I picked up my phone and I typed in G-O and the option in a text message to Seth. And the options were good or got. Go itself or good or got.
Right.
So
it's just one of the things that just drives me wild, but yeah. I'm a God-fearing Catholic, so I just thought I'd pass that up.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah. And by the way, when you do type G-O-D, it does, you know, come up as an acceptable word in quotation marks there. And when you... if you like, I accidentally typed D twice, just I don't know why, but it did accidentally, and it does come up and replaces G-O-D-D with God's, capital G-O-D-S, or Goddess as your next suggestion. But again, those are not what we know as, you know, the creator God. Those are the gods and goddesses of mythology and those kinds of things.
Yes.
Interesting.
Very good. Thank you
sir. Appreciate the call.
God bless. Have a good day.
God bless you too, with a capital G. All right. It's 57 already. Okay, we're going to get a timeout here. And on the other side, we're going to talk about somebody who's very familiar with God. He writes about him. He talks about him. And he does indeed praise him. He is Dr. Everett Piper. And he will join us next on Always Right Radio, AM 1420.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth. Or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420. The Answer. Here's your host, Bob France.
All right, we move seamlessly into hour number two now at 6 minutes past 10, 7 minutes past 10 o'clock. Beg your pardon. Appreciate you being with us. What's all that kind of noise? There's noises I shouldn't be having happen at this moment in time. But it is the 11th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. Good conversation in the first hour. Don't forget Representative Thomas Massie, Kentucky, is going to talk about the FISA court reauthorization vote that was defeated yesterday. And looking forward to that chat. That'll be coming up at 10:35. And John Stover will be in our studio. The president of Ohio Value Voter is going to talk to him about President Trump's new abortion remarks. That'll be coming up at 11:10. Right now, as it is a Thursday, that means it's time to enter the, well, we're always in them, I suppose, but it's time for another battle in the culture wars. We follow our leaders like Dr. Everett Piper. Dr. Piper, a past university president, a best-selling author, a twice-weekly columnist with the Washington Times, a podcast radio host called The Rebellion, also a county commissioner in Osage County, Oklahoma. He does a little bit of everything, and he does them all exceptionally well. Dr. Piper, good morning.
Good morning, Bob. Nice to join you, as always.
Good to talk to you, certainly, as always. Okay, before we get into, we always like to discuss at least one, if not both, of your columns or articles from the week. I have to ask you about Monday. How did you spend Eclipse Day? And I'm really interested in your thoughts, Dr. Piper, on the religious aspect that many people have applied to it. I'm not among them, but I heard a lot of people talk about this with respect to their faith, their place in the universe, and so forth, when we saw the moon pass between the earth and the sun. And a lot of people kind of applied a lot of theological, I'm trying to figure out the way to describe it. I'm just hearing a lot of people expressing their either renewed faith or a reminder of who they are with respect to the grand scheme of things and from our Creator. That, I guess I'll phrase it that way, with what they experienced on Monday. Your thoughts?
Well, quick question of you before I answer. Did you see it? Did it go near? I didn't. I don't know what whether you were in the path.
Yeah, we were in the path of totality here in Northeast Ohio, and in particular in the county I live in, which is west of Cleveland, right in actually a city called Avon Lake, right up on Lake Erie. It was considered to be the prime location to really see it in its totality. So yeah, there was an experience here that was very, very unique to people, I think, obviously around the country. We all know where the path went. And, you know, then, of course, they got some of the similar views in Pennsylvania and up toward New York and so forth. But it was obviously a national event and even an international event in its coverage, even though not everybody got to see it as plainly as we did.
Well, down my way, we were 90%, I think. So I didn't see the same thing you did. But biblically, how do you respond to it biblically?
Yes.
Well, I disagree with those who were making predictions. Some of the Christian community were saying that because the path of totality went over, what was it, seven cities named Nineveh, that this was going to be sort of fulfillment of prophecy, whether it's the rapture or something else. They were making that particular prediction. I resist that because I think it makes us look foolish when our predictions don't materialize. Now, is the Bible replete with prophecy? Absolutely. But is there a test of a prophet? Yes, there is a test of a prophet, and that is, does his predictions come true? And if his don't, then quite frankly, there were serious repercussions for those who claimed to be prophets and then had their predictions fail. The repercussions were called stoning, okay? So I think we need to be very cautious when we start making prophecy, some sort of predictions on these types of things. And I think those that were doing so were biblically in error because Jesus himself tells us that no man knows the day or the hour. So Jesus tells you that, you probably ought to take that to the bank and not start making predictions based on what you see going on around you. That said, one of the posts that I found particularly interesting was a post that said, you know, why does the eclipse actually take place? And is physically, and the reality that the moon is the exact size necessary to actually obscure the sun, and that it has to be the proper distance from the earth. It has to be the exact size that it is. The sun has to be the exact size that it is. Otherwise, we wouldn't even be able to experience these things. Is this all coincidence, or is this evidence of a master designer? Mm-hmm. Should you be more fascinated by that reality than the reality of looking about us on a daily basis? The first chapter of Romans tells us that the truth of God is written on every human heart, and that the nature tells us of the existence of God in natural revelation just as much as Scripture perhaps does. So I don't resist that type of awe and that type of acknowledgement of God when we look about us and look at all, but it shouldn't just happen on a day of the eclipse. It should happen every day as you look about and are amazed by God's creation and the intricate design that obviously points to the fact that there has to be a designer behind it all.
Yeah, and you know, if that's the only takeaway that people have, I'm good with that, because you're right. It really should, you know, underscore that this cannot be accidental, this cannot be happenstance, that there has to be design, there has to be creation, there has to be a plan and so forth. And if that's all people take away from it, I'm good with that. But what you said at the beginning, Dr. Piper, is so much of what I had heard in the days and weeks leading up to this thing, that it was going to be apocalyptic, that it was going to be a sign of, you know, the end, and this sort of thing, you know, and again, people took some very, very strange liberties, I guess, if you will, with scripture and claiming that it was indeed prophecy and so forth. And I just had a little bit of a problem with that. I found it to be an amazing experience. It was, you know, obviously such a celestial phenomenon. It was really amazing to see for the 4 minutes that it stayed dark here in Northeast Ohio. And then the light came back on and I was done and I was over it and I was ready to go again. So I didn't want to read too much into it. I didn't want to dismiss it, you know, out of hand either. But I certainly have a problem with people trying to read too much of religion into too many things. Other than what you just said, you know, it may be proof of a design creator and of an actual God for those who may have been questioning that, then, you know, that's certainly a good thing.
Well, again, I think, we should be as fascinated on a minute-by-minute basis as we look about us. Look at the intricacy of the human body. Look at the intricacy of the eye.
did all of this happen by happenstance? No more so than looking at a book and pretending that the book fell together without an author, or looking at the building and deciding that a building somehow fell together by happenstance without an architect and a contractor. Looking at a painting and deciding, well, that painting just exists because paint flew together in a random way over the course of time, and now you have the Mona Lisa. I mean, that's ridiculous. All of us would laugh at such proclamations, but yet radical Darwinism tells us that that's exactly the explanation for our existence. Well, that's hogwash. We know it. And these events, if anything, can pony us back to the reality that there has to be a designer behind the design, just like there has to be in every other circumstance of life, such as those normal things that I just described, whether it be buildings, books, paintings, or whatnot. Surely there's nothing wrong at looking at an eclipse and coming to those conclusions. In fact, if God intends anything from them, perhaps that's what he intends.
Brilliantly stated. Dr. Everett Piper is our guest. Doctor, let's get into some of your work this week now. We're going to start with Sticks and Stones, Breaking Bones. This is a really, really troubling thing. And you and I talked about this somewhat last week with J.K. Rowling, who is pushing back and basically daring the Scottish government to come for her. They have passed a Hate Crime and Public Order Act that can put people in prison for years for saying things that somebody else takes great offense to and can claim that they have been the victim of a hate crime over this. You wrote this week about the importance of freedom of speech and how much jeopardy it's in. Can you tell us more?
Well, there are over 30 countries around the world right now that have passed these hate speech laws, like Ireland has just passed and Scotland has passed. England has passed them. Brazil has those laws. Croatia, many of the Netherlands, Scandinavian countries have the same laws right now. And essentially, it's criminalization of thought and language, thought and speech. And they label it, we all know this here in the United States, you label something that you disagree with offensive, you call it a microaggression, you say that you've been triggered, and then you slap the word hate over the top of it, and you say it should be a crime for somebody to say those words. At this point in time, you and I can say what we're saying on the radio, or we can say it in a restaurant, and we don't get arrested for doing so. But is the United States a half step behind these other countries? Absolutely, and we know it. If we keep electing the Democrat leaders that we've elected over the last couple election seasons, we're going to be in the same position that Canada is, just across the border, because Canada has the same hate speech laws now, where you actually can be imprisoned in some of these countries for up to 7 years for saying something that another person finds to be offensive. Well, as I was reading through this and writing my article this past week, I stumbled across a writer in all places for the queer majority. He happened to pop up in a feed in Megan Basham's, the Daily Wire commentator on social issues. And I looked at this guy's article, and he was arguing for free speech. He was arguing that these countries have gone too far, and that while he, as a member of the queer community, disagrees with everything that I say, for example, he doesn't think that what I say should be illegal. He thinks that we should have the opportunity to duke it out in the public square, debate in the marketplace of ideas. Mm-hmm. And I agree with this guy wholeheartedly, even though I disagree with his worldview and his sexual choices, and I disagree as much as one person possibly could disagree with his definition of what a human being is, and that is dumbing down the Imago Dei, the image of God, to nothing but the Imago Dog, and defining ourselves by our desires. I think that's a huge categorical error, an ontological error. It's a misdefinition of who we are as people and the inevitability of being where we are right now in balkanized culture, where we're dividing each other by categories of desires, is what this guy's worldview leads to. But at least he believes we should have that debate. So the irony is here that when we're debating free speech, this guy that writes for the queer majority and I and you actually agree in the primacy of being able to say what we want to say. And even though we disagree, not calling each other haters per se, but going back to what your mom told you and my mom told me, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. We need to stop criminalizing words and balkanizing people and dividing people simply because of worldview.
Yeah, I completely concur. And, you know, what they try to do by slapping the word hate in front of everything is say we all have to be opposed to hate. You'll see stop hate on signs and bumper stickers, and you'll see it on the end zones, in the end zones of, or behind the end zones of NFL games and so forth. Stop hate and all these things. Because, of course, nobody likes hatred, and nobody certainly wants anybody to be hated because of who they are or what they are. So they throw the word hate in front of it and think it's going to make everybody be opposed to it. But the reality is, unless we're talking about threatening speech, such as I want to go and kill so-and-so, or I want you, or somebody ought to go, unless you're talking about threats, hate speech needs to be just as protected as flowery speech does. If it isn't, then now, you know, hate is in the eye of the beholder, like beauty. If you decide you are really, really, truly offended by these words and they were hateful to you, you can file a lawsuit, or worse, in Scotland now they're talking about, you can actually have somebody arrested and brought up on charges for being hateful. And you know, hate might be as something as simple as, no, men cannot have babies. What are you kidding? What's wrong with you? Oh, my gosh. That is an offensive, hateful term. You clearly hate trans people, and therefore we're going to bring you up on charges. Dr. Piper, that's we're talking an end to freedom altogether if we allow that to happen.
It's the postmodern deconstruction of language.
There you go.
This happens. The left does it every day. They've dumbed down love to be synonymous with sexual license. Well, I've asked people before, no, that's not the definition of love, because you clearly love people that you choose not to have sex with. At least I hope you do. I mean, they've made love and sex synonymous. Now they've made disagreement synonymous with hate. Anytime you disagree with somebody, if they don't like it and they claim they're offended by your view, even though it may be nothing but the quotation of a Bible verse, they call it hate, and then they make it illegal, mm-hmm. and then they're going to penalize you for quoting the Bible in public.
Exactly.
That's where we are as a culture right now. It's a very dangerous place for us to go, even to the point of people on the radical left, like this writer for Queer Majority, actually agrees with our commentary right now when it comes to the primacy of free speech, allowing it to play out in the public square.
And that's to his credit, by the way, because so many on the left, and I would consider those in the queer community or whatever to be almost all progressive left, you know, typically they don't want that debate. They don't want you to have a word, you know, a say in this whole thing. They want to quash and essentially silence and suppress opposing points of view, dissenting points of view, because that's how they win. It's easier that way. So good for that individual, at least from that standpoint. Okay, let's move to your second column and ask Dr. E this week. And this one is very, very interesting. And we might have a word or two of disagreement about this, but I'll let it play out. Dear Dr. E, I've noticed an increasing number of parents, even within the church, are hiring therapists for their children. I've heard a story about a mother who hired a psychologist to help her daughter adjust to preschool. I've also heard about parents of preteens putting therapists on retainer to help on an as-needed basis with everything from basic relational stress to birth control decisions. What's your opinion of this trend? Does this professional intervention help a child adjust to life's challenges? Should I consider this for my son or daughter wanting to be a good mom from Arizona? You were unequivocal in your response. Tell us.
Well, and I want to put it in context. I want everybody, and I'm not trying to brag about my diplomas on the wall, but the context of my commentary is I have 3 degrees in this stuff. I have a bachelor's degree in psychology, I have a master's degree in human development theory and education, and then I have a PhD in the same, human development theory, pedagogy, and andragogy, and organizational health. Okay, so I understand, at least probably as well as most, the theories behind the counseling profession, the theories that lead to a therapist being licensed. And I'm not saying that all of them are bad, but what I do believe, as a man that's within that profession, is that much of the psychological profession is looking at the wrong thing as it comes up with its theory on how to solve the human dilemma, how to help people flourish. As you know, in my article, I kind of suggest that it's like, suppose I wanted you to develop a theory of fish. I told you your assignment is to go down to the beach with a pencil, a pad of paper, walk along the beach and find some fish and document what you see. So you do. You walk along the beach and you see a bunch of fish laying about in the sand. So you say, you write down, fish are crusty and caked with sand. You see that their eyes are bulging out and that they smell really bad. So you write down, fish have eyes that bulge out and they stink. They have a very bad aroma. Okay, so you come back and I ask you, what's your theory of fish? And you say, well, they're crusty and caked with sand. They lie about on the beach. They have eyes that bulge out, and they smell bad. Now, my question is your theory accurate? Yes, it is, because you documented empirical facts.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the deeper question. Is your theory complete? And the answer is no, because you as a theorist, you as a scientist, didn't do what you should have done, and that is put the fish back where they belonged in the first place, in the water. And now your perspective of what fish are is totally different. And I think that's what the psychological profession, the therapists that come to the table as professionals, are guilty of. Their view of the human being is derived from looking at a broken world and not recognizing that if you put people back into the reality of God where they belonged in the first place, they'd be totally different than what you view them as. So with that as a bias, and it is, I believe psychology is broken, and I think it goes the wrong direction 90% of the time because it's looking at the wrong thing. I would not give your kid over to a psychologist. Number one, because it's your job. You're the mom. You're the dad. Do your job. Don't farm it out to somebody else. But second, even if your kid does have some problems that might warrant some professional partnership with someone other than the parent, like a priest or a pastor or maybe even a professional counselor, make darn sure you know what their worldview is and
yes.
make sure that they're looking at the right thing.
Yes, that is the biggest part of this whole thing for me. Well, that and the fact that you emphasize partnership. You know, I mean, it's one thing to say, I don't have all the answers to my troubled child right now and some of the difficult things they're going through. I can't relate maybe to the generation as well. I don't know the friends as well as I used to. Every parent used to know their kids' friends because they would see their kids' friends because they would be together in the house all the time in one house or the other. And was it time already? Why is that music playing? Turn that off. sorry. This is going way too fast. We need to pick this up. Yeah, we do have Thomas Massey coming, but we'll have to pick this up another time. But anyway, now, you know, oftentimes parents don't even meet the friends because they're only online. They're digital friends, and that's the extent that you have. So parents who can't relate need assistance, and having a partnership with, as you say, a trusted pastor, priest, or even a professional, that's one thing. But outsourcing the job to get your kid's head right to some stranger, especially when you don't know the worldview, is a dangerous, dangerous thing. So I'm so glad you explained it that way, Dr. Piper. I agree with that 100%. We'll have to pick it up next week. We didn't even get to the abortion discussion I wanted to have with you this morning because the time flew so fast. But Dr. Piper, we will endeavor to pick up on this and maybe allow a little bit more time for next week, okay?
All right. Take care.
Thank you, Doctor. Dr. Everett Piper joining us. It's 10:26. We do have to clear the decks now for Representative Thomas Massey. He'll be joining us next to talk FISA and more. Stay here. Always Right Radio, AM 1420.
The Answer.
All right, onward we roll. It is 10:35. Thanks for being with us on AM 1420, The Answer. It's Always Right Radio. Great conversation with Dr. Everett Piper from Oklahoma. Now we're going to go a little bit closer to Ohio, but still outside. Just south of us, we find Kentucky, and that's where our representative, Congressman Tom Massey, resides, and he joins us now on AM 1420, The Answer. Congressman, it's good to have you on our program. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Now, my congressional district includes the entire border between Kentucky and Ohio, so we're always on the lookout for the Buckeye Navy to come across the river.
That's beautiful. Well, we're going to call you. We're going to call you an honorary Buckeye, at least for today,
okay.
Anyway. Okay.
And we do have the Cincinnati Airport in my district.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. All right, I like that. I'm gonna call you one of ours then. We'll claim you, especially with the good work that you're doing, Congressman. I spoke at length with your colleague, John Lott, twice in the past 2 weeks. When I say colleague, of course, I mean in terms of some of the work you've done. I didn't know you had co-written 20 articles with John R. Lott, the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center. But we were talking about this new national red flag resource center that the Department of Justice is endeavoring to create. And you and he wrote a piece opposing this. And so I'm glad to have you on to kind of follow up on what he and I talked about. Can you give us your summary of why this red flag center is unconstitutional, Congressman?
Yeah. First of all, John Lott's amazing. He's not a congressman, but he is a colleague, and we have written a lot of papers together. You know, down in Nashville, when somebody tries to rip off the songwriter, they say they add a word and get a third of the royalties. It's called add a word, get a third. That's kind of that's how I go with John Lott. Like, he writes a rough draft, and then I tune it up for him. but we have co-authored a lot of papers because he comes with facts, he comes with numbers, he's a human encyclopedia, he's literally taken on Bloomberg, the whole anti-gun front by himself. He's written multiple books. And this latest thing that really troubles us is this National Red Flag Center. When I say we, I mean Congress, not me, because this was Nancy Pelosi's Congress, and I didn't vote for it. But a few years ago, they put money in so that the feds could send money to the state that ran red flag programs. And the problem is they've taken that money and they've set up a central federal website. Now, there was no authorization, no legal authorization for the Fed to set up this central website. And right now they say, oh, it's just to disseminate information on how to establish a red flag law, et cetera, resources. Eventually, you know what that's going to morph into, Bob. It's going to be a database, a federal database. And that's why we have to nip this in the bud and call it out.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I'm so glad to see that you are working so closely with John, and because he is, I think, one of the most knowledgeable individuals about Second Amendment rights and about what the goal is of things like this going forward. So I'm glad that you do consider him a colleague and that you consult one another on these kinds of things. The people need to know exactly how, you know, jeopardized their Second Amendment rights are. So I'm so glad to see that. Congressman Thomas Massey from Kentucky, by way of Cincinnati, let's talk about what happened yesterday. The FISA reauthorization, 702 reauthorization, went down to defeat, and you had some interesting observations. Yeah. I quoted you yesterday in your tweet in which you actually posted pictures, either you or some of your team members posted pictures of the carve-out for members of Congress. That other Americans may be surveilled without a warrant, but if anybody wants to, if anybody in the three-letter agencies want to start taking a look at you guys in Congress, well, you have to be made aware of such things and essentially be able to sign off on such surveillance, which, of course, is completely improper. But it did go down to defeat yesterday. What can you say about it this morning?
Yeah, well, you know, that provision, which I ferreted out and exposed, is, no pun intended, a big red flag. It should be a signal to everybody that this bill is not constitutional. If members of Congress are not comfortable with this level of spying or backdoor spying, as they call it, on everybody, if they're so uncomfortable that they have to carve out provisions to protect themselves from this authority, then all of America should be concerned. And what we're really trying to do is make sure we get a warrant in there. You know, the Constitution, we just talked about the Second Amendment. Now we're talking about the Fourth Amendment. It guarantees you a right to be secure in your effects and your things and your private documents. And if the government wants to keep the security and the peace, invade that privacy, pierce that veil, they have to have probable cause and name the things they're going after, and get a search warrant. So what we're trying to do with the FISA reauthorization, by the way, this is supposed to be aimed at foreign intelligence targets, but they turn it on to domestic. It's going to expire, and we're using this opportunity to try and reform it and to try and get that warrant provision in there. And by the way, shout out to two great Buckeyes, Jim Jordan, who's the chair of the Judiciary Committee, who has fought harder than anybody else to get this warrant provision in there. And another shout out to Warren Davidson, who is a congressman from Ohio, who has fought really hard to get a bill passed that says the Fourth Amendment is not for sale. Right now, the government is buying your data from companies, and they're buying it because it's easier than spying on you sometimes. And the problem with that is, they still need to get a warrant. Just because somebody will sell it to you doesn't mean it's legally and constitutionally collected. So Warren Davidson is saying, no, we're not going to let the federal government buy this data unless they've got a warrant to buy it. So that's what we're fighting on. What happened yesterday has been widely misinterpreted. It was basically a procedural vote that went down. It wasn't a vote on the FISA bill itself. It was a double-edged sword. There were 19 Republicans who joined all of the Democrats to take down that procedural vote. And incidentally, what they did is they also took down our opportunity to vote on whether you have a warrant or not in that bill. So they were sort of like there was some friendly fire going on in their tactical legislative parliamentary, you know, move there. So, you know, I didn't participate in that. Neither did Jim Jordan or Warren Davidson because we were so focused on trying to get these reforms to the floor. And today they're trying to pick up the pieces right now, and they're trying to negotiate a way to bring it to the floor again and make sure that we have that vote on that warrant requirement, which is so critical. Again, instead of giving carve-outs to members of Congress, we should treat everybody the same. We shouldn't have rules for thee and not me, and that rule should be the Constitution. Get a warrant.
Yeah, Congressman Thomas Massey is our guest, representative from Kentucky, joining us to talk about this FISA reauthorization of 702 in the FISA Act yesterday. You said there was some friendly fire, and there certainly was. The left is presenting it much more dramatically, saying that the GOP is eating its own because of some of the disagreements here. And in fact, since you mentioned Jordan and Davidson, we'll talk about the House Intelligence Committee chair, another Ohioan, Mike Turner, that said, look, this is not warrantless surveillance of American citizens. He went on CNN just a couple of days ago and said this is surveillance of foreigners who are abroad. We are not surveilling foreigners in the United States, and we are not surveilling Americans in the United States. Those who say it's a warrantless search of Americans' data are just not telling the truth. These are foreigners abroad, a select group of individuals who are a national security threat. Can you tell me how you responded to him and how you respond to it now?
Well, this is a game of semantics, really. And almost everything he said in there is true, but you got to understand what he said. This information is actually collected in the United States using U.S. data providers because a lot of foreign traffic goes through the United States. And it's collected with foreign individuals as the targets. Okay, but there are 250,000, roughly, individuals who are targeted. And we're sweeping up millions of emails. And what happens is sometimes, you know, Mary Catherine sends 10,000 emails, 100 of those might get swept up in this. Or maybe 1,000 of those are swept up in this. So we've seen from the Inspector General, the FBI has abused this program, the NSA has abused this program. So, for instance, I think Mike Turner would say, you know, we're only targeting Hamas and potential terrorists, but they're also targeting businessmen overseas and cabinet members in government. And the way this program is abused can give you some insight in what kind of data is in there. There's an NSA employee who did an inappropriate search using this database on a Tinder date, okay? Somebody that he was dating using an app wanted to do some research. Now, that NSA employee was not looking for evidence of Hamas connections, probably looking for evidence of who else this person may have dated.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this database is a lot broader than they let on to be, and what they're claiming, the other side is claiming, is since we've already got this database and we didn't break any laws collecting all of this information, we shouldn't have to get a warrant to, you know, to put Bob France's name in the query and see what pops out. And we're saying, no, you collected that information under a program that's designed to spy on foreigners. It's not even subject to constitutional limits. So it's outside of criminal law, so you shouldn't include it in searches that the FBI is doing.
Well, that's great clarity, and I'm glad we have that, because you're right. It is confusing. It is semantics, and a lot of that can be used to really confuse the American people. But the bottom line at the end of all of this, and I'm so glad you found the carve-out for congressmen, too, is if there is going to be surveillance of anybody, get a warrant, whether they're a member of Congress or not. And that's the bottom line here, is people need to know that you and Davidson and Jordan and the others who defeated this thing, you want to make sure that the proper procedures are followed and that a warrant is indeed issued before any surveillance of anybody can happen, because we are living in a very, very precarious time right now where so many of our freedoms are in jeopardy. We just talked about Second Amendment, but for crying out loud, our Fourth Amendment rights need to be respected just as much as the Second and the First.
That's right. You can't have security, you can't have freedom if the government knows every step that you take, particularly with a government now that has been weaponized. They are censoring individuals, they are tracking your purchases. This we know because I serve on another committee with Jim Jordan and Warren Davidson, the Weaponization of Government Committee. Mm-hmm. And through subpoenas and whistleblowers, we have discovered the level of weaponization goes pretty deep. We cannot be giving this government more power, and the Constitution is designed to constrain their powers, and so we need to abide by it carefully. And that's, you know, that's what we'll be fighting for here today, is to try and get that warrant requirement in there. Now, the other side, they'll also say, oh, that'll stop us from catching the terrorists, but that's absolutely not true. They've never given us one example where that's the case.
Congressman, I'm told I've got about 3 minutes left with you, so I want to ask you about another question about our freedoms here, and our freedoms to make our own decisions when it comes to medical decisions. They're touting the bird flu now. You tweeted about this about a week ago, too, that birds are apparently affecting dairy cows, and it's going to be very easily transmissible to humans. It's going to be perhaps more deadly than COVID was, and here we are 6.5 months from an election. I can already see we're going to need to mask up, we're going to need to socially distance, and we're going to need to use drop boxes, and we're going to need to use mail-in voting to avoid contaminating everybody. We've seen this movie before. We know how it played out, and we know how many people lost their jobs and lost their freedoms because of the way COVID was handled. What can you tell us? What will the position that the Republicans in Congress be about this this new avian flu outbreak that they are touting?
Well, COVID tyranny was the worst in my lifetime. The tyranny that we've experienced there. They shut down churches. They kept you from traveling. They made you take medical treatments you didn't want and that could be hurtful to you and that you didn't need. And I'm just worried that this could be the beginning of it again. You know, we've discovered that the government was actually experimenting with bird flu and trying to see how it could be transmitted to mammals. And then lo and behold, here you have a year later, just like with the Wuhan research on COVID, SARS-CoV-2, boom, it's in our domestic food supply. But I just like the other thing, whether it was man-made or man-encouraged, they're going to use it to motivate all sorts of bad things. Here are the things they're going to try to motivate that they're already doing here in Congress. Number one, everything they did with COVID, they're going to try and do again, I'm afraid. Number two, they're already saying you can't drink raw milk. They're always after my raw milk. I'm going to ignore them on this one. I'm going to keep drinking my raw milk. Then they're also trying to get electronic ID tags for all cattle, and they're trying to say this is in the name of safety, but we know it's a lot of the globalists who want to reduce the number of cattle, and in order to reduce the number of anything, you have to know how many there are. You have to track them. You have to know who owns them. And so they're going to use this avian bird flu transmitted to cattle to argue that they need these electronic tags on all cattle, that you shouldn't drink raw milk, and all sorts of other things. So, you know, color me skeptic on this, because I've had a front row seat to the lies that CDC and FDA told during COVID and are still telling.
Well, I'm glad you're in that front row and that you are willing to tell everybody what you are, the lies that you are uncovering, because you're right. I agree with you. COVID tyranny was unlike any other tyranny in my lifetime and maybe in the 250 years or so of the United States, honestly. And I'm worried that that was only the trial run, that it was something that is going to lead to even more authoritarianism and totalitarianism, quite frankly, at the hands of the federal government. So I'm glad to know we have people out like you out there fighting against that. So Representative Thomas Massey, thank you for coming on. I appreciate it. Keep up the great work. I hope we can talk again.
Great talking to you, Bob. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. All right. As we wrap that conversation, breaking news. Just found this out. It came across my screen in a text message from my son, of all people. O.J. Simpson has begun his eternal roasting in the fires of hell. O.J. Simpson, who killed his wife and her friend in the most unbelievable manner in the most high profile murder situation / trial certainly of the 20th century and maybe of all time. I guess we'd have to go back and think about the Manson murders and some others, but boy, O.J. Simpson is dead. He died at the age of 76. Cause of death, don't know yet, just cancer. Literally cancer.
That's what the Post is reporting.
Did you know he had cancer?
I did not. The New York Post says he died after a cancer battle.
Okay. I did not know that. That's kind of weird because typically anything OJ makes news.
Yeah.
And if he had been diagnosed with cancer, whenever that was, you would have thought that, because you know what there would have been. There would have been people celebrating that and saying, good, he's getting what he deserves. He got away from murder. He got away with murder and so on and so forth. But at any rate, I did not know that. But O.J. Simpson has died, they say now, of cancer, according to what the New York Post said. And this is going to relaunch the whole conversation about O.J. Simpson and about did he do it? And, of course, he did it. And how could the jury have let him off for it? And the, you know, that's when the true weaponization of race really, really began, I think, in this country, particularly as it pertains to police, because when they found out that one of the officers who investigated the thing had used the N-word in his life at some point somewhere and said clearly he'd be willing to frame a black man for this murder, despite every single piece of forensic DNA, every type of evidence that there is pointing. There's a reason, by the way, why they're not still looking, because they already found him. You know, if he's acquitted and that's a legitimate acquittal, that means the killer is still out there somewhere. And guess what? Investigators and detectives would have been searching for the last 30 years for that person. But there's nowhere else to look, because every time they start looking, evidence points right back to O.J. Simpson.
You never heard of the conspiracy that it was his son?
I have.
That's why the glove didn't fit, because his son's would fit.
I have heard that, but I'm also just not stupid.
Well, the earth is flat too.
And trying to put a leather glove on over a rubber surgical glove is not going to go on very, very easily at all. It is one of the dumbest things in the history of the world. And Johnny Cochran, to his credit, when I say this, I mean this from a legal standpoint. It's his job to try to get his guy off. I don't begrudge him that. That's how the system works. But he came up with the most famous phrase in the history of jurisprudence, I think, ever, when he said, if the glove don't fit, you must acquit. I mean, the whole thing. Kick out the DNA evidence. Kick out the blood of Nicole Brown Simpson on the inside of OJ's car. Forget about all of the evidence that was there. The glove didn't fit. You saw him struggle to put that on. The glove didn't fit, so you must acquit. And the jury said, okay. Sorry, I'm just launching what is going to happen now for the next probably week or so. All of national media is going to relitigate the O.J. Simpson trial, and I'm going to tell you how I have litigated it and how I have actually judged it and how I have actually decided on the sentence. Yes, I didn't start out the breaking news announcement here by saying O.J. Simpson has died. I started out by saying O.J. Simpson has begun his eternal roasting in the fires of hell, because that's what I believe is happening right now. Film at 11. We'll be right back.
.com.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, hour number three is underway at 8 minutes, now 9 minutes past 11 o'clock. Thank you so very much for being with us. Thanks to Thomas Massie, joined us last half hour. If you missed that conversation with the Kentucky congressman, you'll hear it, along with the conversation I had with Dr. Everett Piper before that at WHKRadio.com, about an hour after the show, I should say. So about an hour and a half from now, it'll be available there, and you're going to want to hear those conversations. I'm pleased to welcome my friend John Stover, who is in our studio with us today here. John Stover is the president of Ohio Value Voters, and we're going to talk about a few different things and see what's going on with OVV. John, it's good to see you. How are you?
Good, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you coming in the studio as well. What is new with Ohio Value Voters?
Well, you know, Ohio Value Voters, we're continuing to fight the same issues that you talk about every single day from 9 to 12. And, you know, I wanted to also mention to you, Bob, that our organization, we have six board members. I'm one of them. Diana is the other, my wife. And we have Jim and Teresa Kerrig and Charlie Genta, and then Pastor Dan Wolven. Those are our board members. And something that we discussed roughly 6 years ago was to come up with an award that would be the highest award that would be given to the person that we believed was doing the much that doing as much as that one could possibly do for religious liberty, as well as the other liberties that we have as Americans. Those liberties include, you know, the First Amendment. It covers a number of liberties that we have, the Second Amendment. I mean, even most recently with COVID and not being jabbed, you know, the liberties there to medical freedom. And, of course, FISA, and I heard your last guest discussing that. So it's something that we have looked at. So we came up with an award, and it's referred to as the Patrick Henry Liberty Award. Patrick Henry was an interesting individual. Most of us learned in school when we attended of his Give Me Liberty, Give Me Death speech. You know, the thing that they don't realize about Patrick Henry was that speech that he gave at St. John's Church in Richmond in March of 1775, 2 weeks earlier, riding on his horse through Culpeper, Virginia, he saw a man that was strapped to a whipping post, and this man had his back laid wide open. And he asked townspeople, he said, what is this all about? Why is this man being whipped? Ultimately, he died from it, from his whipping. And it was so bad that Patrick Henry basically could see this man's ribs after the whipping. And townspeople said, well, he's a separatist Baptist preacher that will not accept the king's license to preach. He felt, you know what, I have every right to preach. God has given me that right. I don't need a license from the King of England. So Patrick Henry remembered that event 2 weeks earlier, and when he gave his infamous speech, which was a whole lot more, and we'll post that on our website, ohiovaluevoters.org, as to his entire speech, which is something that, once again, many people did not learn. So the recipients in the past of a Patrick Henry Liberty Award, Bob, has been President Trump. If we could, we'd give it to President Reagan. But President Trump, we've given it to Congressman Jim Jordan, and also the third recipient in 2022 was somebody who was the architect of the heartbeat bill. That's Janet Folger Porter. Mm-hmm. She was the architect, and she was standing up for, of course, the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for the unborn. So the 2024 recipient, and it was unanimous, it wasn't even close, is the following. And let me just read that, if I may. Ohio Value Voters proudly presents the 2024 Patrick Henry Liberty Award to Bob France, Always Right Radio, Salem Media Group. And Bob, I can tell you that you know, our organization appreciates tremendously the work that you do on air, the guests that you have on, and the fact that you are constantly standing up for the people in our state, in our country, with Always Right Radio. There was a time that I was a little concerned with Always Right Radio. This was November of 2022, whenever you came on the air and you said, I have a special announcement to make. And, you know, you left everybody wondering, what is it that he's going to announce? I thought, Bob's running for Congress. He's running for Senate. He's doing something here that's going to be very important. And then you came on the air and you said, you know, I've changed my mind. I'm going to get jabbed. I'm going to take the COVID vaccine that's being recommended. I almost fell over. I thought, oh no, he's changing, going from always right to always left. And I can still remember a housewife that called in. And this housewife, when she called in, she said, I was doing some work in the kitchen. You came on the air, made that statement. I thought you were serious. She said, I dropped everything. And it just put me in remembrance of the 1938 Orson Welles War of the Worlds, when they thought that the world was coming to an end because Martians had attacked. So fortunately, you didn't allow that to go on too long, and people realized you were just joking. But, Bob, it's with great honor that Ohio Value Voters presents this award to you today.
Well, I don't have thank you, Seth. I don't have a whole lot of words, and it's rare that I say that because I have lots of words. Sometimes I have the best words. I'm humbled, particularly given the names of the people that you have given that to in the past. I don't feel like, you know, the contributions that I'm able to make. You know, we all, John, a lot of people will tell me how, you know, that they're inspired by some of the things that I say that I do, and they go and do their, you know, their parts. And that's what I say is we all have a part to play. We all have a role in the grand scheme here of what we're trying to do, which isn't much, by the way. You know, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We're not trying to create something from nothing. Creation was already done by God, and the inspired founders of this country created the Constitution and you know, provided us with all we have to do is just maintain. We don't have to do anything really special here. We just have to keep things going the way that they are, because they are as good as it gets. It's the greatest thing in history, and we all have a role to play in that, in whatever that looks like. And I play my role with a microphone and maybe in some venues where I give speeches and so on and so forth. And I don't feel like what I do is that special. I just have a bigger voice and a bigger, like I said, a bigger platform than others. But it's people like you. You don't have a platform every day. You know, I mean, you know, to the extent that you can reach your email list of followers, you know, newsletters and so on and so forth. But you and, you know, Diane and the other board members and the volunteers at organizations like OVV and several others who are working very hard to, again, just kind of maintain that which we were gifted. You guys do all of this stuff without the notoriety that a guy like I, you know, people like me get, because we have the you know, the transmitter and the microphone. So it's a little, it's humbling, but it's almost a little bit, I feel almost a little bit undeserving of such a thing from people who, you know, you do this for your life. You do this day after day after day and week after week and month after month. And sadly, after some results like what happened in November, disappointment after disappointment. And instead of, you know, throwing in the towel, you guys keep fighting. You guys are the ones that deserve the awards. And I feel almost, like I said, undeserving of such an honor. But
well, you know, Bob, you have those that, of course, look at it otherwise. And you have, you know, you're doing a great deal for, once again, the civil liberties. And, you know, you can't say enough about the liberties that, unfortunately, we're not going to see realized with the unborn in our state and in our country. You know, I mean, this is something that is very, very troubling to me personally. You know, before I get into, I know what you wanted to discuss here regarding President Trump and his position regarding abortion. But, you know, people have asked, well, did President Trump actually receive this award, Patrick Henry Liberty Award? I can assure you that I know that it went to Mar-a-Lago. The big question is it still there, or did the FBI take that along with all of the other boxes whenever they, you know, performed that illegal raid on his home?
That's a great question. And that is a beautiful plaque, by the way. And the idea that that award that you brought with you here for me is the identical award that President Trump has and that Congressman Jordan has, maybe in their offices or on a mantle in their home, is very, very humbling. And I do want to talk about that. But before we talk about that aspect of it, because I don't like, in such a crucially important election cycle that we're in, you know, we're 6.5 months away-ish from the election, I don't like having to say anything that isn't fully supportive of the effort of getting President Trump back in office, because the alternative is, quite frankly, it's unsustainable. Another 4 years of what we have endured, and I'm not talking about just the economy and our wallets are a little lighter and our pennies are pinching a little bit more. I'm talking about the existence of the country as it is now. It's in jeopardy. So I don't like to talk about things that are counter to the goal here, but I do know that pro-life organizations, including Ohio Value Voters, are looking at some of the things and saying, wait a minute, what is the goal here, Mr. President? You said you're pro-life. And President Trump had a conversion, by the way, which is not, you know, to be dismissed lightly, but he had been on, you know, many an interview format prior to his political launch being a fully pro-choice Democrat and saying, I believe in a woman's right to choose. And in one interview, I've seen it many times, we've all seen it, in which he said, the interviewer said, does that mean, you know, at any time? You know, third trimester, and he paused and think they were even talking about partial birth abortions. And he said, you know, if you're going to be pro-choice, you have to be all the way pro-choice. So, yes. So he had a conversion. And when he ran for president, he told us he was pro-life. And thank God he has been. He was the first sitting president ever to attend the March for Life. He has been very, very strong on pro-life causes. And now that he's running for re-election or to boot Biden out of there and get his second term, He's all over the place. And I'm just wondering what OVV's viewpoints are here. Yesterday in Atlanta, he told reporters that if Congress passed a federal ban on abortion, he would not sign it if he's the president. He also said that the Arizona law, which bans abortions in that state, with the exception of saving the life of the mother, he said it goes too far and needs to be straightened out. And of Florida's six-week heartbeat law now, which was similar to Ohio's, we'll talk about that part in a moment, he said that's going to change. Everybody wants it to happen, and you're getting the will of the people. So I'm just trying to figure out where the president is on his pro-life stance, because he has been very much, you know, supportive of pro-life causes, but then he says things like this, and I'm wondering, is this going to help the cause of getting him back into the White House? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, excuse me, Bob. One of the things that we look at our organization is this, is that, you know, any time that you have a group of people in any society being dehumanized, whether it's the Jews in Germany and Europe or the last greatest moral issue that we've ever faced in this country, which was slavery, you know, I look upon this as being extremely similar to what we saw relative to the Dobbs decision, turning things back over to the states, mm-hmm. as it relates to the Dred Scott decision of March of 1857, a 7-2 decision by the Supreme Court against Dred Scott that had been working its way for about 8 to 10 years through the courts, finally reached the Supreme Court. They ruled 7-2 against Dred Scott, basically saying that Dred Scott is a slave, his master had the right to his property, and there was not due process to take that right from him. Well, we look back on that and we say, well, that's ridiculous. What a decision that nobody today would look back on and support. Well, you know, we look at, once again, the states' rights that they had at that time. You had slave states and free states. Mm-hmm. So for someone to have come forward at that point in time and make the statement after the Dred Scott decision to basically say, look, here's what we're going to do. Similar to the 14, 15, 16 week, okay, that abortions would be permitted. We're going to say we're only going to have someone who is black, they're going to be a slave up until their 14th, 15th, 16th birthday. We're not going to, that would have been foolish to have even have thought. But here's what we're dealing with today, and our organization has endorsed President Trump. We disagree 100% relative to the decision that he has made relative to abortion. I understand why he's made it from a political perspective.
Right.
But I certainly believe that even in the state of Ohio, Bob, if we had had, as was the case relative to getting to what had taken place in Germany and specifically the concentration camps, Eisenhower went in, he brought in photographers, he brought in people with video cams, and they ended up taking to make sure that nobody forgot what had taken place. If every single Ohioan of voting age would have been required to have watched the silent scream or one of those other videos, we would have saw a much, much different outcome relative to the heartbeat bill. So getting back to the president, we disagree with his position. We continue to be pro-life from a conception standpoint. That position is not going to change, but we have endorsed President Trump because, as you stated, the alternative is certainly something we don't want to see.
Yeah, no question about it. And you know, the only reason I think it needs to be brought up at all is because he is going to need every pro-life voter in America, in particular in the 7 states that are going to decide the election. I think it's pretty clear that there are 43 states that are really not in doubt. Ours is one of them. But in the seven states that it is going to be, you know, a very, you know, nip and tuck thing. I mean, literally, you know, every vote is going to count. I don't want anybody who's decidedly pro-life to hear things like this and say, I'm not going to be voting, either not voting or, you know, voting for someone else or voting third party. The president needs to, I think, coalesce and his voters need to coalesce around him in a unified fashion to say, look, we are all very much adamantly pro-life. I think he can say, look, it should be states' rights and that's okay. And then we have to work harder in our states to try to change things like what happened in November. But to say that if there was an agreement among all members of the people's representatives, if the Congress and the House and the Senate put a bill on your desk to ban abortions federally, he said he wouldn't sign it.
Yeah, that's
troubling to me.
Oh, it is. It is.
And he needs to clarify that with people and explain why and talk about it from the political perspective as opposed to the faith and the life perspective, because I think that's troubling for people.
Well, you know, one of the things that we saw in the state of Ohio in the General Assembly, not this session, but the previous session, that, you know, I've spoken to the state representative, Gary Click. Mm-hmm. He introduced a personhood bill, very short, but basically this is what we need to see, is that the unborn child has every single constitutional right that all of us have as Americans.
Right.
And we need to drive that question back to the Supreme Court, personhood, and that... you know, because if we are able to do that, I'm hopeful that we'll see a different outcome versus the states' rights. I mean, once again, nobody thought that it was appropriate to have states to determine who would be a slave and who would not be a slave based upon the right state that they were from. And it's the same thing holds true with the rights of the unborn.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. And to the state of Ohio and what happened in November with the constitutional amendment, to my understanding, there is work being done right now in Columbus trying to figure out what some of the words meant in the language and in the, you know, the vernacular of the actual amendment. And that once the intention of those words is gleaned and once it's, you know, actually confirmed, there may be something they can do to lessen the dramatic impact of any time for any reason up until the moment of birth, which is essentially what that did. You are in constant contact with our legislators there. Do you know where that stands right now?
You know, I know that that's something that is being worked on. I've spoken to a number of legislators, Bob, regarding that point, because there was so much ambiguity in that constitutional amendment. That's exactly right. And I've spoken to them. I said, you know, it is going to be the responsibility of the General Assembly to define so that there is no ambiguity relative to that constitutional amendment.
Yeah, and I don't know how it's probably going to be something that takes a very long time to play out in the courts, because there's going to be legislation put forward saying this word is ambiguous and therefore it can be interpreted this way, so therefore the amendment has to be struck down or it has to be amended by another legislative action, and this is probably going to be in the courts for a long time.
Yes.
In the meantime, what is law? Is the six-week heartbeat law still in effect now, or does the constitutional amendment, while challenges are going on, does that take precedent? Do we know?
You know, my understanding is that it's, you know, everything has been put on hold at this point in time.
Okay.
And that's my understanding.
Okay, that's the reason I'm asking, because if everything is put on hold, what has been settled law, which is the signing of the heart, you know, DeWine, the one of the few things he did, I think, that was worthwhile, is he signed that law. So that would still be in effect.
That's my understanding.
At 6 weeks or ish, whenever the heartbeat can be detected. So the amendment for the time being is on hold.
Yes.
Okay. I hope that is the case, because, you know, as long as it is a state by state thing, do you, I know we're a little short here, but do you, John, feel like the elimination of Roe versus Wade with the Dobbs decision is better for the cause of life or worse?
You know, I feel that it is better, but once again, it doesn't cover those children that are unborn. It doesn't cover the children that can be aborted as a result of the Dobbs decision and turning it back over to the states, because you can have New York, California coming up with extremely liberal laws that would be put in place that would take it all the way up to the ninth month.
Yeah, and well, you know, we would expect that from California and New York. We didn't expect it here in Ohio, and that's literally what happened. That's the reason I asked you, because I've asked many guests that since last November, looking at red states that have traditionally been pro-life states doing something as radical here, I almost feel like I'd rather go back to Roe. because at least we had the heartbeat law and we could do some things like that here. And I know that's such a very, very difficult thing. And maybe that's why President Trump is, he's got to balance political, you know, strategy here on what's going to draw more people in versus what his, you know, his beliefs are. And sometimes it goes back and forth. And I think that's what's happening here. And I just hope we get some clarity from him so that we can all be rowing the boat in the same direction.
Yes.
In support of life and in support of President Trump retaking the White House so that we can get this country back on the path that it's supposed to be on. So, okay. John Stover, Ohio Value Voters. Again, I'm honored and I'm humbled by that you would come down to the studio bearing that that beautiful plaque there with the Patrick Henry Award. I want to thank you for coming on, and I want to thank you for what you do.
Well, thank you, Bob. And I want to make reference to the fact that right now your listeners can go to OhioValueVoters.org, and they will see that on the banner page, the actual award.
I was going to say myself, I wish this was TV or podcasted or something on camera because that award is so beautiful. So that's good to know that they can see that there. So at OhioValueVoters.org. John Stover, thank you so much.
Thank you, Bob.
All right. It's 11:30. We'll take our final time out of here. We've got one more segment. We'll make that yours, 216-901-0945. If you want to get in line, do it right now on Always Right Radio, AM 1420, The Answer.
The Answer.
Well, that was interesting. I mean, I have a little bit of a hard time with certain things, accepting praise for things that I just do that are, you know, I should be doing anyway. Much less accepting awards is a little bit hard to do. It's you know, like I said to John Stover, you know what they do every day. They don't do it for awards. They do what they do for people, for our communities, for our families, for our country. That's what they do it for. And, I do what I do for the same reason. I don't need to get plaques for just doing what I think I should be doing. I just have a bigger mouth and a bigger voice and a bigger platform than anybody else. That's all. I don't feel like what I'm doing is special. Let's put it that way. There's a lot of people doing a lot of things for the right reasons. And I like to think that I'm doing them for the right reasons too. But having said that, I am truly, truly honored that Ohio Value Voters would present me with this. It is beautiful. Mary Ann just took some pictures of John and I during the break at the bottom with this award. So if you're wondering what it looks like, I'll share that and post it on social media. I think John said a picture of the award. I could probably look that up now, or Seth or somebody can look that up at the Ohio Value Voters website. There might be a picture of the plaque there now, highvaluevoters.org. Let's have a look-see and see if it's up there. Yeah, it is. There is a beautiful picture of the plaque right in the middle of the homepage right now. And it's a picture of Patrick Henry. And it does, yeah, I mean, I'm rarely at a loss for words, but sometimes when it comes to accepting this type of praise, this is among those times. I don't know what to say about it except for thank you. And the number of people who are texting me congratulations and you know, their well wishes for this. Thank you all too. I mean, I'll after the show I'll get back to texting everybody back personally, but thank you for that as well. And you know, I'll be 100% honest with you. There's nothing that I do on the radio every day talking about some of these things that are so important to us about restoring our republic. And as I said, you know, to John, what we're trying to do here every day, it shouldn't be that hard. We're not trying to make something new out of something that didn't exist. We're not trying to create, you know, this republic. This republic was created by some extraordinarily dedicated and devoted people who are devoted to liberty and devoted to God and devoted to what gave, you know, what the reason why we were all here. And they were tired of having God's creation being hamstrung and limited so much by tyrannical oppressors. And they said, enough is enough. We're going to honor God by creating a free republic. And we're going to declare that freedom, or we're going to protect that freedom, or we're going to make sure that through the future that they couldn't even imagine what 250 years later would look like, what 500 years later will look like. They had no idea, so they wrote something that would stand the test of time. Of all of the changes, they had no idea, and they still got what they put together in the Constitution. They managed to say, to consider almost every eventuality, that if this happens, well, then this is what should protect and preserve that freedom. And against this threat and that threat and all of the glorious, of all the glorious documents in the history of the world, I mean, honestly, the United States Constitution, along with her original declaration, but especially the Constitution, is, I don't know, it's all we're trying to do is protect it. We're not writing it. We're not creating a country. We're not founding a country. All we're trying to do is maintain a country. It shouldn't be that hard. It shouldn't be that hard. And so I'm doing my small part. We all have a part to play in this, a role to play in this great big production, and I'm just doing my part. And the fact that somebody sees value in it and gave me this award is very humbling. But I still feel like I'm not doing anything everybody else who are active listeners to the show that participate in do every single day, and they do it without fanfare. So I feel unworthy, but I am very, very much appreciative. And while I'm at it, do we have time to take a call here, Seth? I'm not really sure if we do. We got a minute and 10 seconds here. All right, bring up Ron real quick, and then I'll say what I wanted to say to close it all out. Hey, Ron, go ahead, sir. You got a minute here, buddy.
Yeah, hey, Bob, congratulations on the award. And Ohio Value Voters, I think the key is for constitutional referendum on pro-life. Think of the words, and our posterity, to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. That means something. Posterity literally means all those yet to be born.
That's exactly right. That is exactly correct. And that's what they represent, and that's why and thank you, Ron, for that. I appreciate that, and for the kind.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.